There's an uneasiness growing within today's parents. Questions arise around what our kids are being taught, exposed to, and influenced by. Thankfully, a fully engaged, well-informed parent is a powerful thing. And that's why I support Answers in Genesis, and I would recommend you do as well, because it's important to remember that the battle for our kids' minds isn't won in the courts or the classrooms. It's won from the safety and comfort of our own home. So be the difference our kids need and visit www.answers.gift today.
How COVID changed the church. This is episode 110 of Church and Main. Well, hello and welcome to Church and Main. This is the podcast that is at the intersection of faith and modern life. We are a podcast that focuses on religion and public affairs, and I'm Dennis Sanders, your host. Hello. First off, I want to apologize for the long period between episodes. Been busy with life as a pastor. As I've said earlier, in the summer, I've been moving a church and kind of getting things set up in a new location. I did try to make some, see about possibilities with potential guests, but a lot of them were busy at this time and could do it later. And then others were busy and had to cancel. And also, I'm going to be on vacation next week. So that's actually going to be another period with no new episodes. So this is August. It's that type of the time of the year where things kind of are on hold until September. So with that out of the way, I want to start this off by sharing experience that happened to me at the church where I served. So in February of 2020, there was a group of us, and we were trying to figure out how do we open the church up to the community. That it's been something we had been trying to do, and we came up with an idea. Our music director just knows a ton of people in the community, and she knows lots of different artists, and so we wanted to maybe have a night of what we were going to call music and fellowship, and we would gather for a potluck. And then maybe listen to various people perform. And so a ton of people actually came. They filled up the church. It was a success. I think it was a really great experience. I think I definitely loved it and was looking forward to doing this again. That was the hope, that we were going to try to do this on a monthly basis. And so we plan to do it the same time next month. Of March in 2020. Well, we all know what happened in March of 2020. COVID basically shut society down. So we didn't have that event in March. In fact, we never had it ever again. And in fact, we didn't meet in person, really in any form for the most part, for 14 months. And when we started to worship again in May of 2021, things were incredibly different. There were people who had been part of the community for a long time. They moved on. Others, for whatever reason, for a lot of different reasons, some I think very legitimate, ended up watching mostly online. And there were still things we couldn't do. We did not for a long time have refreshments. And even some of the things that we started to do, come back up and do again, well, they became different. COVID changed the church where I served. And what I have learned is that nothing will ever be the same. We can't go back to February of 2020, no matter how hard we try. Of course, that wasn't just my case. Churches large and small, whether they are theologically conservative or liberal, no matter what, have all had to deal with a changed world. Theologian Andy Crouch wrote that COVID in many ways was more like a blizzard, or even more succinctly, like a mini ice age. And that what he meant by that was that it was an event that would just basically shatter cultural assumptions. Everything changed. What was mission and ministry going to be like after COVID? What is it like after COVID? And how should the church rise to meet this challenge? And where are we failing? So to answer those questions, I spoke to Sean Chow. Chow is an ordained minister in the Presbyterian Church USA. He is also an associate in that denomination's 1001 New Worshiping Communities movement. He resources and consults with regional denominational bodies and churches and church plants as they are trying to start new expressions of what it means to be church now. And what he's trying to do with a lot of, with these groups is to prepare them, to equip them, to do what God is calling them to do. He is working with many congregations as they seek to redefine their mission and ministry. And I think that if you're like me, if you're a pastor or a lay leader that's trying to figure out what to do in your congregation post-COVID, then I think you want to hear this interview. So now, let's listen to Sean Chow. Well, thanks a lot, Sean, for taking the time to chat with me a little bit about the church after COVID.
No problem. It's great to be here.
So I think maybe the best way to kind of set this up is to kind of think about what the church was like before, or maybe right up to when the pandemic happened. You know, I think we all have our image of how things were going. And I know sometimes in my own mind, how things were going were this kind of wonderful little thing. And the reality was it wasn't. There were kind of issues that were there. But, you know, we kind of have this, I think, kind of perfect past as opposed to the present that we're finding ourselves in. So I guess the first question is, how would you describe the church before COVID? And what were some signs that there were issues that were going to be revealed during the pandemic?
I think kind of as we look back, even before COVID, is that the church, as you kind of said, the church was in denial that, hey, everyone was thinking that, hey, you know what, the youth are gone, that's fine. And believing that, hey, when they get married or whatever it is, that they will come back. That whole idea of that as soon as they get married and they go, oh, we want to have our kids back in church again, that they'd come back to the church. And that really wasn't the case. That we kept thinking that this is circular, and it's not. And dealing with a lot of different things that we have. But what was interesting about even going through COVID is that crisis accelerates the changes that were already happening. So the changes that we've experienced in the last three and a half years were already happening in the church, the kind of dividing of where people are, and that in that feeling that church was kind of a relic of a time gone by. While many of us held on to that sooner or later, it'll come back to the way it was in the 1950s and 1960s. And suddenly everyone is going to kind of come back to the way it was. And that kind of changes were happening, whether we were really wanting them or really identifying them, because yeah, we just accelerate, the change has really kind of accelerated over these last few years into who we've become. And it's vastly interesting of what has happened.
What do you think that we were in such denial for so long? What were the things that kind of made it easy for us to not think that things were changing?
I think what a lot of churches hold on to is that where they don't have to change is that church. So I'm from the Presbyterian Church. I'm on national staff of the Presbyterian Church, and there's endowments in churches where mm-hmm. where they've been saved and put money aside, so they can live basically however they want to live, and have the funds to continue on with a full time pastor or a part time pastor. And they hadn't come to the realization to the point where, hey, this church might not be here for my children or even my grandchildren. And so a lot of my different conversations that I have with people is saying, we are starting to see the end of this church. This church of where we are might be coming in. We're running out of funds. And now we have to make some of the drastic changes. And we're like, and they're thinking, but we're not equipped to do this anymore. If we were 10 years younger or 20 years younger, when you were in that comfortability spot, some of these changes could have been better equipped to make some of these changes. And a lot of it is that they're comfortable. And now the question becomes, what is the legacy of, say, First Presbyterian Church, now that most of the congregation is older and the neighborhood in which they ministered for so many generations, it does not resemble them anymore. It is vastly different, as now people travel into their church rather than being in the community that their church is. And so there's so many different things that are going on in the church prior to even to the pandemic of saying, we don't want to change because changing would say, hey, we need to change the way we do things. And that would make me uncomfortable. And then I'm going to get up and I'm going to go find a church where I feel comfortable. And that might be the church that has the hymns, they might have the organ or whatnot, where I feel comfortable, instead of saying, no, this is where God's called us to. And we may need to make some of these drastic moves in order to invite and be welcoming to younger generations or people that are in the neighborhood. An interesting kind of story is that my wife grew up Assemblies of God. And mm-hmm. so her dad was like a lay pastor and so forth. And so her family grew up in this church. They sung hymns. They had an electric organ and all this stuff. And then as her generation got older and her parents were like, her parents' generation was like, something needs to be done to keep our kids in this church. And so they made the drastic realization that they needed to, the church needed to change in a way that would be welcoming to my wife's generation and this younger generation of the young families. And they couldn't continue the way they had done before, but they were willing to say, we want to hand this church off to you, knowing that it isn't our church. We are just caretakers of this church, and we want to hand it off to you, and saying, this church is a legacy, and it's not just to make me feel comfortable, but it's for all of us. And as my mother-in-law talks about sometimes, she's all, sometimes it was the light show, as we've all went through those generations where there's flashing lights during worship and so forth. But they realized that they couldn't keep doing what they had been doing to keep the younger generations, but they were entrusted with the church. Then they needed to come to a point where they passed it off. And you see this legacy kind of going on, and not many churches are willing to make that move. As they get older, they want to stay the way they've done worship all the whole time, and not realizing that church for the younger generations, or even my kids, needs to be different than the way I do it. And when are we willing to hand off the church to them in order that they may take the lead and they might feel that this is their church, where it's a multi-generational church as opposed to just being about one generation?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I remember very succinctly from the pandemic, and then later on, especially as the congregation that I lead were making some changes, was how much some people didn't like to change. And when they kind of described what is it that they wanted really from the church, it was fascinating that the answer was comfort. And it was fascinating to me to hear that, because it was, and kind of hearing what you're saying it just kind of seems like a lot of it was the church or the people as consumers that I don't like what I'm having, finding out at this church. So I'll go to something that satisfies my needs, as opposed to kind of sticking it out and being kind of more of a servant and willing to kind of deal with the change, knowing that this is something different. It sounds like something that you're kind of picking up there.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of us are right now, is that this world, especially the United Church in the United States, is very consumer centric. That yes. It's all about me. What can I take? What does this church have to fill my needs? And then I will take and I will take and I will take. And then one day you might go, oh, this church doesn't fill my needs anymore. I'm going to go to the next church down the street and they consume all their needs, not all their needs, but all of what they have, until it's like, oh, it's all about me being fed, is what the mentality of those people, about people in church, is. What can I get out of it? As opposed to a little bit more of like, how do I serve? How do I learn? How do I grow as a deeper disciple? But how do I also really enable myself to become a deeper disciple of Christ? And as my pastor kind of talked about, he was giving a sermon like a few months ago, and I was like, this was deep and profound. He's like, you know what? I like tacos. He's like, I can eat tacos, and even when I shouldn't. He's like, we're like a church that we just like to eat the tacos. He's like, but there comes a time where I just need to walk the tacos off. I just can't sit there and eat the tacos, but I need to walk them off. And that, in that essence, it's saying, hey, I need to go out there and live what I've eaten, and live and work off what I've eaten, saying that we have enough. You and I have probably been to church so long, and I think a lot of us do, and we always think that we don't do enough, or we don't know enough to do anything with it. But maybe we need, as we're growing, it's like, oh, we need to do something with what we're learning. We don't just shouldn't sit in Bible studies, prayer meetings, listen to the next great sermon, but we need to live out what we do. And I think that's the big problem of the church, is that we're in the American culture also, is that we're so consumer focused. How can this church serve me? What can I get out of it? As opposed to, oh, I'm getting a little from the church, but I also need to walk with that church into living out what the gospel says. And I think that's sometimes, like, people are like, oh, you need that? I'll get right to check for $10. As opposed to saying, how do we see the people around us? How do we see the people that are in the community, and how can we serve them? And I think oftentimes we just pass by the people that are living under the bridge, or in Los Angeles, there's just encampments of homeless people, or even it might not be those huge issues, but how can I walk with people through addiction, or those that are going, that are grieving, or how do we see the issues that are going around us? Every church has a multitude of them, let alone surrounded by a community that's deeply affected by different things. Instead of saying, I'm not worried about you, who's a stranger or naked, or the whole Matthew 25 thing, but I need to know Jesus more. That's more important, that I know Jesus and I know the gospel. And we become so focused on that, we don't see those that are hungry, the stranger, the naked, and it goes on and on, that we don't live out the gospel. We're just simply saying we want to consume it. And I think that's where we have the problem of the church today, is that it's comfortable to just sit in a Bible study. It's uncomfortable walking up to the homeless or the stranger or those that don't have a voice or in pain or whatever, and to put ourselves in those places.
So would you say this basically comes down to an issue of discipleship?
It does. I think churches, and I want to say I'm one of them too, are bad at discipling people. That you know what, I like being a part of a small group is something that I've always loved, but to walk with people through the ups and downs of life. But as a pastor, oftentimes, how am I going to do that same thing with 200 people? How do I help people walk through that? Those people are like, I'm too busy for a small group or a discipleship group or whatnot. But how do we need to come up with a way, how do we walk with our people so that they're getting deeper into Christ, not only consuming, but how do we live it out in the way we do? How do we see this naked, those that are naked, those are the stranger, those are hungry, and so forth. But how do we live it out?
So kind of looking at the kind of what we would say were in the before, how do you think that churches handled themselves during? And I know that, you know, COVID is still somewhat with us, but kind of in, especially in the thick of it, maybe that first year, year and a half. I know that there was a article that came out maybe about a year or around the time of the pandemic that talked about kind of entering into a blizzard, which then could become a mini ice age. How do you think churches handled that? Did they, were they even prepared for the blizzard, or did they, and then later the ice age, or did they just kind of not do well? Or are there examples of churches that really did kind of step up?
So Andy Crouch and Dan Blanchard wrote that book, not that book, that article on the ice age. I was like, this is a phenomenal thing. And it's really like,
it is.
I talk about it an awful lot as they talk about that. We all thought this whole pandemic thing was a blizzard. Like, hey, we're going to shelter in place for 2 weeks and then everything will be perfectly fine. As in all blizzards, the roads will be kind of cleared and so forth. But in actuality, what we experienced was an ice age, a drastic reshaping the landscape. And what was amazing about that article, they wrote it like a month into the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do they, how prophetic is that, that you've, that you're talking about things like 2 years down the road? I'm like, those dudes are like geniuses and prophetic. And I was like, man, I wish I would be able to think like that. But churches like were in the pandemic were saying, when can we get back together? When can we have choir? Like a few weeks into the pandemic, the shelter in place in California here, we had a 2 week shelter in place and they said, everything will be perfectly fine. So everyone's like, okay, we can have choir again. Let's open up. Let's have choir. We're like, no, hold on. This thing is really going on. And they're like, we want to go back to the way it was. And they're like, we're missing church. This is the center of who I am. I'm like, and then we've really had, and during it, we had to figure out what was essential for our church and our churches. No longer were the men's fellowship, were that drastically important. But a lot of churches had to figure out who and what they were. So like the church that I go to discovered that community, they needed to figure out how to get together and how to get together in the midst of this pandemic, because some people couldn't do Zoom and some people couldn't do this or that, but they understood that they needed to get together. So they began to meet in a park across the street from where they used to be. They met in a park, really spaced out. And the other thing that they figured out was that the sacraments were important to them. It was important for them to get together and have and break bread together, to go through the Lord's Supper together, do communion together. So you had to figure that out. It was like, okay, we're putting a little crackers and we're throwing it to you, or however they figured it out how to do it. But they needed to figure out and find out what is essential. And I think that is the best thing that to describe what we as a church has had to do. Is all that fluff things, all those things that you as a pastor and I as a pastor inherited from generations of doing different things, that like you just kept adding different things to the church before it came this huge thing where it was like, where did we inherit all these programs and these different traditions when the person that created it was like 100 years ago and you're like, what? But we still do it. And so you're bringing everything down to the essentials is what has been great about this is the church has been able to be whittled down to the essential, saying this is who and what we are as a community. And it's like, for one, it's like, okay, we need to be together. We need to worship together and sing and pray alongside one another in a safe way, of course. And the other one was communion. Each of us had to figure out all these different things in different ways. Some people stopped doing worship altogether and said, we are just going to come to, we are like, I have a friend, a colleague, that she was a pastor of a church in Kentucky. And she's like, I got on the phone. Couldn't do Zoom. We did a conference call with everybody. And I preached and we prayed with one another. That was their essentials. Everything else was gone and whittled it down to the very essential who and what they are. And so we have this opportunity now that we're in this post-pandemic kind of place. If you say it post-pandemic, however we want to describe it, is that we get a fresh start. So we're not going to, we don't have to go back to what we were doing in 2019 or early 2020, that we can say, okay, this is who we are now as a church. And how do we go about being who we are? Because what we used to be doing might not be working anymore. It might not be relevant to what we are, or perhaps we don't have the people that we used to do, that used to do the food pantry that we did before, that were like, we've done a food pantry for 20 years, but now all the people that used to run it are no longer with us, that they went to other churches, or they just don't want to come out anymore, or whatever it is. Now we can begin to re-say, this is who we are as a congregation. And kind of what I wrote about in my book is kind of saying, let's look at this, that we have this overarching mission statement of who we are, but the people that God's called together might be vastly different than it was before. And what is passionate for this group of people? And how do we figure out our core values of who and what we are as this new gathered community, saying, how do we live out this into the community? And this might not be what it was before, because you might have a new group of people. Some people might be doing Zoom from across the country or whatever it is, but how do we live out into this?
So, and how do you deal with the fact that, as you've said, and lots of churches have dealt with this, I have myself, but when we start back up with in-person worship, there are lots of people who aren't there. Some people have moved on, have either just stopped going to church altogether or have gone to another church. And it seems like you have to deal almost with a season of grief about that loss. It is also, I think, an impetus of moving forward and doing some different things. But it also seems like you have to balance that with what's been before, that it's not coming back, and that you have to kind of deal with that sense of grief, of loss of that.
Yeah. As you imagine, most of us go into our churches these days, and it's not nearly, the people that are in worship is far and few between, as opposed to before. And you could have been a 300 person worship, and they're probably down to half attendance. If that, yeah. I have a friend who's a pastor of a large church, and he's like, people aren't coming out. They aren't coming out physically to church. They might still be watching it on Zoom. He's like, he's like, we got through the pandemic. Our finances were fine, but now we are in this after effect now, that people are wondering if they still want to be connected to this, or do they need to find another church, or whatever it is. And we're in this place of really trying to figure out. And it's one thing to say, this is where we are. This is where who we were. And it's sad. We just need to lift that up to God and say, we thank you for that chapter in our ministry, God. But now, God, you're doing something different. And I think a lot, especially in the world that we live in, people are looking for hope, not necessarily even hope in Jesus sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, we come to church and we have this hope in Jesus, but they're looking for not to come to church and they're saying, oh, there's a plan, there's an idea, there's this hope that this church can be effective into this community once again, as opposed to, well, we're just going to come and gather and look around and acknowledge people are missing and that's sad and we're not going to do anything about it. But people are hanging on to leaders that are willing to lead into new places. Of course, leading to new places, we'll always go to those places sometimes and we're like, oops, that was a bad road to go down to. Let's back it up. But saying, here's where God's calling us to be, not to merely sit in this pew, to say, we want to be an active part of this community. And I believe that's what God calls us to. A lot of times we get that woe is me kind of mentality and kind of saying, look what's going on in the community. And that's sad. But we want to be in our four walls and deal with our different four walls. But how do we intercede into and be God's word into the community? And what does that mean to walk through people that were on the edge of society financially, and now pre-pandemic, and now we're dealing with $6 a gallon of gas here in California? It's like they couldn't make it when it was at $3 or $4, but now you're at $6. and mm-hmm. you've just gone through a pandemic and everything. How do we walk with people that are going through that, or the rise of social inequities that has happened really in the pandemic, and people saying, "Well, we were all in the same boat together." I'm like, "No, we weren't all in the same boat. We were all riding on the same ocean, but some of y'all were on a yacht, and some of us were in a dinghy, and some of us were simply treading water and hoping that we weren't being overwhelmed." But how do we walk mm-hmm. through some of these different things, and how do we as the church kind of be in the middle of all of that?
So how does the church, I think, move people, especially if it was before, and I think also in some ways after, from a consumerist mindset to one that's more disciple focused? Because I think a lot of us do want to see that. But I also think so much of the church, and I even think some of the structure beyond the church, has always been feeding into how we have to be a certain way so that people will be interested in helping us to come to church. How do we change that around, that people aren't there feeling that they're coming to have their needs met, but to feel that they are called to serve?
Going through what I talk about a lot is from Jeremiah 29:3-8, mm-hmm. where it's really talking about that, hey, we need to plant gardens and settle down, really be invested in the community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the problem is that mm-hmm. people aren't invested in their community. We look at ourselves and how do we take care of who's number one? And that's often ourselves, instead of saying, hey, how do I care for my neighbor? How do I care for my neighbor that's going through different things? Or how do I care about the one that's homeless down the street, or mentally challenged, or all these different things? And then then kind of going on, it talks about how our shalom is connected to the shalom of the community that God's called us to. And I find that incredibly fascinating, and that the completeness, this whole idea of shalom that we get, this completeness, complete peace, that my sense of complete peace in God is connected to how the shalom of the community that God's called me to. Am I willing mm-hmm. to step out into this community and be a part of the solution for the different things that I know I can't solve all the problems that are out there, but how can I help bring about peace and prosperity of the community that God's called us to? And oftentimes that we drive in, we go, oh, God hasn't called me to this community. God's called me to the hills instead of the valley. And how do I say, God's called me to this church in this particular town at this particular time? How can I best serve to help create the shalom in this community, into this town? How am I going to be a part of this? And it might say, hey, I'm Sean. I can't solve all the problems, but say Sean and a couple of people from the church, we can make a difference. One person can start to bring other people together, and we can make a difference to solve maybe one problem in the town. And as we live out the gospel, as I think is the most important part. It isn't about saying discipleship, saying I'm going to sit in my small group and I'm going to be in that small group discipleship. I did 5 years with this small group and I am so much deeper. I can tell you things in Hebrew and Greek, but I haven't done anything about that. And to live, how do we live it all out? And which I think is incredibly important, is how do we live out what we do? And a lot of what I write about is how do we intercede in the community? What does the community, how do we be God, and be the hands and feet of God into the community instead of simply driving by it? But like, how do we sit and do we pray for the community? Do we walk through the community and pray for it? Do we stop and care for and wave to the children that are on the swing sets or whatever it is? But how do we be a part of the community to really know and see, hey, and pray, God, break my heart for what breaks yours in this community. I want to know, I want to feel what it's broken in this community, and so that I might step into it. And part of it is a lot of times is that pastors will say, we pray for the community. I go, well, when do you pray for the community? They're like, well, in staff meetings, we prayed for the community, the pastoral prayer during worship. but have we walked? When I was a new church development pastor, I would walk the 5 to 6 mile circle around the our ministry area. I would say, God, break my heart for what breaks yours in this community. I stop and pray for over the schools. I stop and say, pray for the government, the police officers, the healthcare workers, and everything, and say, and saying, God, make me relevant in this community. That it's not that I'm just putting lip service to this, but I truly want the peace and the prosperity of this community. And it's not simply I'm saying, okay, I want the peace and prosperity of the city, but no, God, move within me so that me and the congregation that I serve or walk along with or people that I walk feel, and how can we do something to solve some of these issues of alcoholism, children's neglect, gun violence, et cetera, et cetera. But to truly be a part of the solution.
Where do you see, especially mainline congregations, moving after COVID? And I bring that up in the context of, as you are well aware of, that probably the narrative that we're used to hearing a lot is, of course, decline. And that was already happening before COVID. It's really sped up after COVID, but where do you see churches kind of moving? Where do you see some green shoots happening of how churches are taking risks, being a little bit different, understanding, you know, maybe at the end of the ice age of how everything is different now?
It's interesting as the calls that I get. So I work for the National Church. Mm-hmm. And so specifically in church planting, and people are like, what are church plants really doing to kind of to be flexible and to be audible in the midst of all of this? And so we wrote resources of how do we revision and remission in a post-pandemic age. And a lot of it is like, how do we know, one, how do we know our community? And two, what we kind of talked about is we don't look back. Looking back and saying, oh, well, it's okay to say this is where we were. But saying, here's where we want to go, and saying, it's okay to experiment. It's okay that to do things. And if you fail, that's perfectly fine. But at least you tried something new. But also when you're saying we're going to do something new, it's not saying we're going to do something. And this something we're going to be doing for the next 100 years, or kind of like we talked about earlier, we're going to do 100 years, and the next pastor is going to deal with it. But I'm saying we're going to do this for 6 months. Then let's evaluate is this effective? Is this meeting what we want to do? And then if we're meeting what God calls us to do, what can we do to help it be streamlined or better? And kind of doing really looking at that to really experiment and to understand that we're in this new place and saying we want to be exactly how we were in 2019 isn't realistic, that we need to take into account of the people that have left, the people that we've gained. There's incredible stories that my friend Chris, who's the pastor of a church in New York City, that they went online and they started gathering all these different people. And then about a year ago, they decided, okay, it's time to start meeting back in person. Every so often, we're going to start meeting in person. But people felt so inclined to be a part of his church that people drove from South Carolina on their days that they were meeting in person to come up to his church because they felt so connected that they were a part of his church. They did those drives. So there's connection that in Zoom where you're like, okay, I feel a part of this, whatever. And then there's really feeling connected because people right now, sorry, that's okay. People right now are really feeling that need to be a part of something. And being a part of something that is real and that is doing something. If we're just sitting there giving lip service saying, sooner or later, we're going to do something. People are like, okay, great. But if we're saying, here's what we want to be and to live into. We're going to experiment. We're going to fail along the way. And that's perfectly fine. Because oftentimes, you know, as a pastor, and I know as a pastor, is we hate to fail. That we when we're saying we're going to try, we're going to do something. But we've planned it out so that we're like, we can't fail in this. We've really thought through it. We've done the strategic thinking of all of how to do it. But in this time, saying, you know what? There's some things that are happening. Maybe we need to have the pulse of some of these different things and be willing to experiment and saying, well, that didn't go well as well as we wanted to. And that's perfectly fine. But at least we as a church try to do something in the community and let this not be the one time we do something in the next 10 years. But we're going to follow it up by saying we learned something from that and we want to do something else. And so there's so many stories of different people doing different things and experimenting and really living into who God calls us to. That another one is the way station just down the street here in Camarillo, California. I've sat in the back of their church because it was a cool, hip place on a Sunday evening to go to worship. It was an art studio. So you're like, they had professional musicians. And I was like, this is awesome. Professional musicians leading worship. And you're like, this is cool. But then the pandemic happened and you couldn't meet in this artist studio anymore. And they found themselves in the park across the street. And they were like, well, why don't people meet us in the artist studio? We left the door open. There's a sandwich board inviting people in and we talked to people, but a lot of people never really came in. But now they're in this park across the street that you have low income families having barbecues in, that you have homeless kind of walking through. You have those that are mental illness that are just one Sunday, someone just screaming obscenities in the corner of the park. That all these different things, but now they feel that they're really getting the pulse of the community because instead of being isolated in a professional artist studio, they're where God calls them to be. And I was preaching there on Sunday night and I was staring across the park and there was this 5-year-old kid just laying on the ground all by himself. I was like, should I call the police or something? Because I didn't see his parents anywhere. I was like, hey, what's the deal? And then come to find out that his parents were on the freeway all within eyesight, but they were in the center median of the freeway on ramp selling flowers. But that was the place for him to feel safe. They had an eye on him, but he's still a good distance away. The pastor had a good conversation with them. But they would have never come to this place where they getting the pulse of Camarillo, California in that park. Where they meet the mentally challenged, those that are low income, those that need food and they help them out all the time, those that just need to be distant, but you can tell that they have an ear for what's going on in worship and what is being said in worship. That radical things like this are happening across the country and across the world as the church was caused during the pandemic to really rethink who and what it is. And some of it might have been by accident, like this church happened to be in the park and they didn't plan for all this to happen, but as a result of the pandemic caused them to worship outside, that they're in this whole new demographic, having this whole new mission of who and what they are, simply because this is where they ended up. And they don't intend to go back because now they realize that they were called to this place at this time to sit with those that are having mental illness or those that are just walking through the park or the families that are on the swing set or those that are selling flowers on the median of the freeway or whatever it is that God has called them to this place. And I think we as a church as a whole need to recognize that God is calling us into these new places. And sometimes we feel like we're like begrudging, like, oh, we're not the cool hip church anymore. That we're not in the artist studio with professional musicians, but God's called us to these new places, which is exciting that they're seeking the shalom of the community that God's called them to. In a far different, but also far more effective ways, as they're open to the prodding of where God's led them.
What role do you see for online ministry? Because obviously that's something that a lot of churches weren't doing until COVID hit. And so what role do you see for, I guess some people have now called it hybrid ministry, that is both online but also in person, that can in some ways stretch people, especially people who may be watching hundreds of miles away to be engaged.
And this is going to be interesting moving forward. It's like in the Presbyterian Church, we're starting to talk like we have membership and all this stuff. How does somebody that I'm in California, mm-hmm. that's in North Dakota, but they regularly give and everything like that, but they've never stepped into your church and stuff like that. How do you categorize them as a member? And these are incredible questions, but they're far above my pay grade and stuff like that. how to do that. But yeah, I go to, what was great about the pandemic in many different ways is that I got to visit people that my friends are leading worship in Nashville, Tennessee, and in New York. And you got to be able to be alongside with your friends and some of your colleagues and meet new intriguing places and experience worship in different places. But here we are where we're meeting in person and online. And I don't think you can't say, okay, we're no longer doing online worship anymore. I don't think that's something that churches can do anymore. Even though early on in the pandemic, they're like, okay, this is just for a season. Then we're going to cut away and we're going to go back to church as normal. Because so many of the people that even regular attenders of a certain church now view it online. My mother-in-law loves watching at her church online because she doesn't have to get dressed and get up and go to the church and stuff like that. But how do we do this? How do we balance? We understand that the church is not the building, but it's also the relationships that are part of it. So I think what's going to be intriguing moving forward is how do we have pastors or do we have leaders that are perfect, that are designed to say, we're going to create community with those that do it online. That you can't just say you're going to view the worship on Sunday, and it's going to be a one way thing, them watching us on worship, doing worship, and then click out and they're done. But there's going to have to be a way for the church to connect back to them and create relationships with them. So whether these are new positions, I've started to see some of them start to rise. Like, we need an online pastor, a pastor that knows how to gather people online and create relationships with different people. That's a non-physical on campus. They're not trying to get them on campus saying, hey, from down the street, my goal is to get you into the church. But realizing that these people might not ever want to be meeting in person, but saying that there will always be, but how do we create community and an intentional community? And that's going to be the challenge moving forward, is how do we create intentional community with people that, like, oh, we're just peeking in. And then when we get bored, we can click to another church or click off. But how do we with such easy to move away or people that want to be anonymous in all this, that's going to be a challenge for pastors and leaders to really engage online people as they're moving forward. But it's here to stay. And it's how do we start to deal with it? How do we create small groups? How do we just create discussion groups? How do we create discipleship groups? And how do we do some of these things to keep people, to have people engaged, as opposed to it being a one-way thing? It becomes a two-way street.
Yeah, I think it's something that I'm still trying to figure out. And I think it's going to require some different strategies and even, I think, different content in what's going to be out there. But yeah, we're not going back to not having it, but I think it's, how is it going to be used and how can we connect with people so it's not just them watching something?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to have to figure out how to be a two-way street. And then, because we become invested when we have a relationship with the leader or other people there, then you're like, I'm going to show up because I have a relationship with the other three boxes that are on the Zoom screen. And I want to be with them, as opposed to, oh, I don't know them. I have no investment in this, so I'm not going to show up, because they don't mean anything to me. And it's not like I want to be with Sam or whoever that is next in the other boxes. But if it's like, oh, Sam's going to be there, or Laura's going to be there, or whatever, then I'm going to show up. It's going to be a priority in my life, as opposed to, oh, hey, there's a football game on. I'd rather watch the football game than click into the small group.
So if someone is maybe the pastor of a church or the lay leader of a congregation that is looking to try to do something new, and they're trying to kind of figure out where they are and what they can do, how would they kind of connect with you? Which is obviously the way you talk about your website and book and all of them.
So my website is rediscoveringvitality.com. And so they can connect with me through there. The other place to really kind of connect with me is Sean@rediscoveringvitality.com. And so I do a bunch of different workshops across the country. I do a lot of traveling. I have a book that talks a little bit like what we talked about, is how do we interact with the community? Understanding that this isn't a blizzard that we went through, but an ice age. And how do we not be a relic of a time gone by, but how do we interact it's a workbook. And so how do we, as a church, kind of really challenge ourselves and to be a part of the solution instead of being so inwardly focused, to be outwardly focused. And so you can buy my book at cyclicalpublishing.com, because if you go to Amazon, it's like twice the cost. So if you go cyclicalpublishing.com/rediscovering-vitality/ yes. So, or you can just go to Cyclical Publishing, and my book is Rediscovering Vitality. And you can pick it up there for $20 as opposed to the $50 that's on Amazon.
Really? Wow.
Yes. And so pick it up there.
Yeah. will definitely suggest that. Definitely.
Yeah. And I'm totally up for conversations if people just want to email me and have conversations about what's going on in the world, in their church world. I'm more than open to that as well.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. And I thank you, because I think that this is a message that a lot of churches, a lot of communities are kind of dealing with and trying to figure out where to go next. And I think that this is a way of giving them a bit of hope.
Yes, it is. Thank you for having me, Dennis. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed the episode. I think it was very enlightening, and I hope that it was something that you will be able to learn a little bit more. There are some links in the show notes that I hope that you will take advantage of, including Sean's website, that I hope that you will consider using. In the past, I have asked you to consider making a donation, and when you go to our Church in Maine's website, which is at churchinmaine.org. And I just wanted to say thank you to one person who is making kind of a sustaining donation. That's at a certain amount they are giving each month to support this podcast. So I do want to say to Joe, thank you for that. And also to those who haven't, please consider doing that. It helps to defray some of the costs of putting this content online, and you can do so again by going to Church in Maine's website, churchinmaine.org, and look for the button that says donate. And while you're there, you can also see videos, obviously past episodes, and the like. And also, just one other thing, if you have, please consider leaving a rating or review at our on the podcast app of your choice. That helps for people to find this podcast a lot easier. So that is it for this episode of Church in Maine. I'm Dennis Sanders, your host. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, Godspeed, and I'll see you soon.